Thank you so much. I am very glad to be with you this evening. And I look forward to discussing this very relevant topic, social media and our society. I would like to say that my beautiful family is here. Make sure you say hello to them as well. My wife, Melita, who is from Lafayette, Tennessee. And I myself am originally from Carthage. Both of us are from God's country. So we're right at home here in Mount Pleasant. So glad we got to come here and visit with you this evening. We have passed numerous times on our way to church. Camp, and we've gotten to know several of you, and of course appreciate that wonderful relationship there, and looking forward to discussing more with you this evening afterwards and visiting with you, of course. So very glad to be with you this evening. Is my PowerPoint ready? I just hit forward. There we are. All right. Now this evening we're talking about social media and your soul. In the last 10 years, our society has changed a great deal because of social media. The television, of course, was a great advancement. The radio was a tremendous advancement, and it just moved things forward so very quickly, at least as far as what was going on in those days and during those times. Now with social media, you have made that increase exponentially by getting information and seeing things and finding out things in a way that our society until now could never have even imagined. Right now, if I wanted to, I could broadcast this live, this sermon live with my cell phone, and someone on the other side of the country could watch it. Okay, they could watch this live through the Facebook app, through my camera, through the microphone, and watch this as it happens, which is pretty amazing. Given about 20 years ago, in order to do the same thing, you would have to have a van full of equipment, a couple of reporters, and a few technicians running the whole thing. And now I can just sit right here, film it all for, if millions turned in, but you know, for millions to watch if they wanted. And that comparison there, I hope, illustrates to you just how much social media has changed things. So we started out, even if you wanted to go back further, with the Pony Express, which moved on into the mail system as well. And social media, you know, whenever I say that word, what I'm talking about is Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, all of these websites that in one way or another connect people. And the founder of Facebook, his name has left me, but that was his grand idea whenever he developed Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg, he wanted to see how people were connected, and he did that via Facebook and has done just that. He has connected us all, for better or for worse. With social media, with Instagram and others that I mentioned, opinions are shaped by pictures, video snippets, and articles that are sometimes only half true. The internet itself was loosely, I'm going to get to that in a moment, the internet itself was loosely imagined in the 1960s and 1970s, and it really closely resembles what they were trying to generate at that day, right? So it's gone way, way back. There's a podcast that's out there called Freakonomics. Freakonomics. You know, instead of economics, it's Freakonomics. And they just had a podcast recently, and I'll be presenting some of that information this evening, that talked about how the internet works exactly. And they interviewed some of the men who, at that time, were developing and generating this idea. So it's been, the idea at least, has been around for quite some time. In the late 90s, you didn't know really who you interacted with online. You didn't know who you chatted with. I grew up in the 90s. I'm part of Generation X. I bought my first Nintendo for $100, the NES system, which they're coming out with a mini version this year. Bought that at the Carthage Walmart, and I still remember Mom telling me that's the worst, you know, waste of money I've ever seen in my life. And she was probably right, but I had a lot of fun with it all the same. So I have actually grown up with technology. Thank you, sir. I got something going on with my throat. I myself, Generation X, those in between 30 and 45 years of age, have grown up with technology. It was, you know, new when we were young, and we were interested in it. We grew up with it, and so we've come along with it in a big way. But now, your online world, what's different is your online world is an extension of your real world. Okay? In the 90s, when you were chatting with someone on a game or on a sports website because you had a similar interest, you didn't know who that person was. But these days with social media, it is a direct mirror of what's going on in your life in some ways. Okay? There's other issues with that. But when you're online, you're talking, kids, you're talking to the students and friends that you see at school. Adults, you're talking to old school friends, you're talking to, you know, people you know at work. So your online world is a mirror of your virtual, of your real world, actually. And what is making this so dangerous is because all this is so very new, we're not sure exactly how to act online a lot of times. Being a school counselor as I am, I often talk to students about appropriate online behavior because that really is a very new thing. What's interesting, though, is oftentimes we know how to act in public, but we don't often know how to act online. So if we are going to be concerned about our spiritual lives, social media and your soul, right? Because this does involve your soul. One of the things about online interaction is, hey, I'm online, I can say and do whatever I want. And certainly, with your American civil liberties to a degree, you can do really anything you want. But that does not mean that it's good for your Christian life. It does not mean it's good for your Christian liberties. So you've got to think before you hit the send button. A lot of times people will post pictures and things, and I'm like, what are you thinking? I thought you were a Christian. I just saw you at church on Sunday. What's really going on with you? And it's because, spiritually speaking, we like to keep church in here. That's what's going on with that in some ways. We like to keep God in this building right here, and when we leave, we don't really want to include Him in other ways. Well, it doesn't work that way. If you're a Christian, you're following God in here, you're following at home, you're following Him online as well. And that's what you have to keep in mind when you're behaving online, because God does see what we do online. I want to speak briefly about how the internet works. And I got this, some of this from the Freakonomics podcast I mentioned a moment ago. The internet made a lot of promises to connect us and make our lives easier, but is it really doing that? In some ways it certainly is, but in other ways it's causing a great deal of trouble. The internet has the power to hypnotize us with kitten videos, enslave us by making us take pointless surveys about which movie star we're like. I'm most like Brad Pitt, by the way. And it can cause two people who haven't seen each other in 20 years to argue vehemently over political and moral issues, even though they're separated by hundreds or even thousands of miles. Take, for instance, what happened in Ferguson, Missouri. Until August of 2014, most people had not heard of this town, and then suddenly everyone had. An 18-year-old black resident of Ferguson was shot and killed by a white police officer. This has led to protests, chaos, and more violence. The police in Ferguson responded with tear gas and stun grenades. It was pretty much all you heard about for quite some time. Dr. Dufecky, a professor of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, studies the impact, the social impact rather, of technology. As the Ferguson story was unspooling, she was trying to keep up on Twitter and on Facebook. And whenever she was on Twitter, there was all kinds of stuff on Twitter, all right? Twitter, if you don't know, you have 140 characters to say something. And you type it up, and there's this huge feed that moves, and there's pictures. If you don't know what it is, ask your child or your grandchild. Well, on Twitter, there was all kinds of stuff happening, and when something big goes on, it's going to show up on social media, because it's what people are talking about. They're sharing news stories. If they're in the thick of it, they're sharing it right there. They're taking pictures of the riot, of the good thing that's happening, whatever the case might be. In this case, it was bad stuff that was going on, so a lot of stuff was on Twitter. But on Facebook, there were videos of people doing the ice bucket challenge. Why the difference? And what does that mean exactly? Why do I even bring that up? Facebook has a mathematical equation to show you more of what you want to see. That's how Facebook works. That's how they get advertising revenue. Okay? I follow a lot of fly fishing pages. I follow a lot of barbecue pages. I'm searching on eBay for a new fly rod. Not right now, honey. But if I do search on eBay for a new fly rod, on Facebook, there's going to be an ad. An ad on eBay for the 7-foot, 3-weight Orvis Superfine Glass. There's going to be an ad on Facebook for the rod or the bamboo rod or whatever that I was looking up. Well, that's creepy. Let me show you what else is creepy. Hey Siri. She responded. She didn't audibly respond. But now I'm talking to her. I'm not sure I understand, she says. She's listening to me. Right now, she's listening to me. I got to research this a little bit more to make sure this is safe. But it's really cool to just say, hey Siri. Hey Siri. And it pops up. She's listening to me. There's a lot of other sort of things out there that I don't know if I fully believe that your camera can watch you. I've got some questions about that. But that, my phone's listening to me. Now, I think she's only listening for that response. She's only listening for that voice command. She's not analyzing what I'm saying. But could she? I believe she probably could. But Twitter itself, you know, I mentioned the Facebook algorithm, the mathematical equation to show you more of what you want. And why is that a bad thing? Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because if you like kitten videos, you're going to see more kitten videos, and that's how it operates. Twitter, on the other hand, shows you what your friends are sharing, shows you what's happening in real time. So there's a lot of implications to this. Okay? If Facebook wanted to squash a subject, it certainly could. Because it controls the funnel, basically. It controls the funnel of information that comes to you. And if they wanted to design that, if they wanted to make it do something, I have no doubt that they could. I don't think companies want to do that, really. Because if they do anything that's much too intrusive, then people will stop using it. So it's got to be intrusive enough to where they'll learn about you, but it's got to be, you know, not so intrusive that it scares us away. Well, I see that you guys do Lads to Leaders, wonderful program. We do that as well at Birdwell's Chapel. We did a storyline video, which is a movie, basically. It's a 4 to 5 minute movie. And the story went that it was in the future, and all paper books had been destroyed. All right, and the only way that people read and got their information was digitally. That was the only way they did it. We've got Kindles now, right? I've got the Kindle app on my phone. We've got iBooks. And what would happen, I posed the question in the movie, what would happen if all paper books were gone? To cut to the chase, there would be no evidence that what was said on here was any different. If you have a book right now, the technology is there to update it right now, and you not even know it, unless you had a hard copy. Or unless you relied on your memory, which our memories are very fallible, unless you relied on your memory to say, now I know that didn't say that. That's pretty scary, if you ask me. Now, I don't think companies are trying to take us over, but I think they are. I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything, but this is how it works, and it's kind of scary as to what they could do. A lot of Orwellian, George Orwell, things that he has written, reference or talk about, putting chips in our head to control us. I don't think they've done that, but they very well may have put it directly into our hands if we're not careful. So let's talk about how social media affects your teenager. On average, teens use their technology. Well, back in 1995, let me say that. In 1995, 2.5 hours of a teen's day was spent in front of a screen. We had a Nintendo 64 then, but the internet was very new at the time. We had cell phones, but they were about the size of this glass of water here. So we didn't do a whole lot with them, but we spent 2.5 hours in front of screens. Today's teen spends about 9 hours per day on digital media and sleeps 7.5 hours per day. So digital media is getting more time than sleep is, and your teenager needs a good night's sleep would be about 8 hours. Now, parents, on the other hand, of today's teen think that their kids are on digital screens three hours per day. So there's a huge discrepancy. Teens are actually on there about 9 hours, but parents think it's really only about three. And it's probably what you see them doing at home. A lot of schools, more and more, are allowing phones in the classroom, which I don't have a problem with necessarily, because they can be tremendous teaching tools. There's no doubt about that. As far as an emotional state, let's talk about that. I'm a counselor, so I like to talk about people's feelings quite a bit. Teens who have a lot of screen time report higher anxiety and more depression. Let's talk about why that is. You have a middle school girl, seventh grader in particular. That's the group that I work with. I work with middle schoolers, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And let's say you have a 7th grade girl who has an Instagram account, and she's constantly, you know, taking selfie pictures all day long, and she's looking, you know, how many likes am I getting? How many comments am I getting? You know, and she starts to gauge her self-worth by what people say to her, because that's a positive reinforcement. You know, whenever you post something online and people start commenting positively about it, hey, that's a positive reinforcement. And that's a good thing in some ways. But it can be taken to such an extreme that teenagers actually start relying on the screen for their own self-worth. And that's pretty scary because, you know, teenagers, you might look for validation on your phone. You might look for validation, you know, through those social media sites. And I get it and I understand it. But your value does not come from that, because you have a Savior who died for you. So you're worth a great deal, regardless of what is said on social media. So just keep that in mind. Another thing that teenagers must go through, if they're heavily involved in social media, and I think if it's monitored, then you know it can be a very good thing. Let's not say that I'm here completely bashing it at all. But one of the things that teenagers have to deal with is what's called FOMO, fear of missing out. They don't want to miss out, okay? Because it's where things are happening. You know, when I was in school, we went to the skating rink, Happy J Skating Rink in Carthage, and because we didn't want to miss out. And if you remember to your school days, you had maybe a hangout corner. Some people had the smoking porch, I know. And you'd go out, and that's where you'd want to be because that's where your friends were. You also, adults, had that fear of missing out. You didn't want to miss out on anything. So let's cut them up some slack as far as that goes, because they don't want to miss out. But what's happening is, you know, when I was growing up, we had a break. Okay, we're at school, which in some ways, socially speaking, emotionally speaking, can be a dangerous place. You got people who are talking about you, and you know it can be, you know, quite anxiety produces a lot of anxiety because of that. And whenever you go home, you actually get a break from it. What the phone or the computer or social media does, it does not allow a break. If you've got a bully, if you've got somebody that's picking on you, that's talking about you, they have 24-hour access to you, young people. And you've got to really weigh the pros and cons of this issue. Am I going to take a steady diet off of social media? Am I going to talk to mom more? Am I going to talk to dad more? So they can help me better manage this. Because that's what you got to do. You've got to manage it. More than 20% of teenagers say they almost always wake up during the night to check or post on social media. And that really does disrupt sleep. If you wake up in the middle of the night, for those of us who are parents and who have had crying children in the middle of the night, no matter how tired you might be, it's difficult to get back into that good level of sleep. So that's what's going on with teenagers quite often, is they're getting disrupted in their night because they don't want to miss out on something. And this does affect their mood, as though, you know, young people needed another reason to be grumpy. Now they're getting less sleep, and so there's even more reason for them to be grumpy and upset and short-tempered because they're not getting adequate rest. And rest is such a vital aspect of mental and emotional health. If you're not getting rest, you're going to be feeling the effects of it when you go to school, when you go to work. It's going to be a very dangerous thing for you in more ways than one. So definitely keep that in mind. It's disrupting our children's sleep. Cyberbullying. Let's talk about that. I was at a staff development today, and we heavily monitor bullying. We don't want it to go on. And one of the things we have to keep in mind is there is what's called cyberbullying. That is any type of bullying that goes on where young people are harassed online via text, social media, or anything like that. So cyberbullying is a very real thing. One organization did a study and found that 95% of teenagers who use social media have witnessed cyberbullying, and 33% have been victims themselves. Now, I think the word bullying is thrown around way too much. If I have some teachers in here, you probably know what I mean. I have children come to me and say they've been bullied, but when I talk to them and I talk to the other person, the person that came to me is usually the one who starts it. So it's not, I don't think, as bad a problem as many would have us to believe. But I do think it is a serious issue that does need to be addressed, cyberbullying being one of those. And of all the bullying that's out there, it's probably the worst one because you have that anonymity factor, the anonymous factor. Okay, I could rig up any type of social media under a fake name and then just start harassing people with it under somebody else's name. You see what I'm saying? There's no fingerprint analysis. There's no submission of a birth certificate to get on any of these social media sites. All you have to do is sign up, and then you can wreak a lot of havoc. And one of the reasons this has become such a hot topic is because students, children, teenagers, they have gone so far as to take their own lives because bullying was such a problem, it was such an issue in their life. And so that tells me we definitely need to talk about it. Drugs and alcohol. A study that explored the relationship between teenagers, social media, and drug use found that 70% of teenagers aged 12 to 17 use social media, and that those who interact with it on a daily basis are 5 times more likely to use tobacco, 3 times more likely to use alcohol, and twice as likely to use marijuana. And that comes from young people, having free rein on what they see and do online. And if that's going on, they're liable to get into all sorts of trouble that they otherwise would never have access to. So that's what's going on there. You've got all these young people that have huge access to all this media, and there's no filter. There can be, but there's not often. And they're more likely to be engaged in these risky behaviors, probably because of the people that they hang around with. If you look at the internet, it doesn't mean that you're going to suddenly become a drug addict. It does not mean that. But if you have free rein online, it does probably mean, hey, I wonder where mom and dad are here. If you're spending 4 hours before you go to bed and another 2 hours in the middle of the night online, somebody's got to step in there and change that. Somebody's got to step in there and make a change. Mom and dad, you're the ones that are supposed to do that. In addition, 40% admitted they had been exposed to pictures of people under the influence via social media, suggesting correlation between the two factors. And although a correlation is all it is, it makes sense that social media would amp up the amount of peer pressure to which teenagers are exposed. And certainly it does. Say that you've got a teenager who is at home and she's following all these people on Instagram, and they're showing all the parties they're in, they're cussing, they're saying things that they shouldn't, they're posting inappropriate pictures, and that person, that girl, that boy, he or she, they're getting all the attention. Now, young people like attention, most of them. And if that's and that can be a very easy way to get that attention. So, if I start acting like him, if I start acting like her, then maybe I'll have more friends. Then maybe I'll have more access to things, to popularity. which is a huge thing to a lot of young people. So that's why that correlation is there, I believe, because you see these people that are having a good time and they're getting all this attention, even though they're engaging in risky behavior. And now we've got young people that want to follow in those other young people's footsteps. They want to be like them, and that's where that influence comes from. We're trying to keep our teens' minds pure, but then we give them something that effectively gives them an ability to hide and to lock things away. They need a life, most definitely, but what they don't need is a life where there are no adult influences. That's what the phone is. It's a playground, but there's no adults. It's a gym, but there's no teachers. Okay, there's no adult supervision that's going on here. There's been all kinds of talk in the past about, you know, moderators that are in chat rooms. I've heard of those things. And it's pretty much non-existent these days, I believe, when it comes right down to it. So young people can definitely hide things from you. If they get nervous when you pick up their phone, if they get nervous when you go for their iPad, they're hiding something. Trust me, they're hiding something. I don't know what. It could be any number of things, and I don't want to assume anything. But if they get nervous when you pick it up, then you need to definitely look at it. You need to look at it regularly anyway and talk to them about it and see if there's anything that they're looking at that they know they shouldn't. Because you can stumble upon things. That happens quite often. Even with good filters that are on your computers, that are on your digital technologies, even though there are things on there to keep bad things out, something can definitely still slip through. And young people, you might not see it. What I'm looking at isn't bad for me. If it's questionable, I have to say it's got to be bad for you. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good, and the evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart. Luke chapter 6 and verse 45. This has probably been one of the biggest debates that I've had with young people as I've, you know, been a youth minister, been a counselor. What I listen to, what I watch doesn't affect me. That is a lie. That is a bold-faced lie that you need to stop believing. Because what you watch, what you read, what you listen to, it's affecting you one way or another, for good or for bad. Okay? You can't tell me that somebody who sings about sexual pleasure outside of marriage, sings about all this sin, is somehow Jesus' number one fan. Okay? Because that just does not work. That's not how this Christian stuff works. You've got somebody who's obviously living in sin, and they're, you know, number one to you in your life, and you follow them. You got to question yourself, hey, what am I doing as far as my Christian life goes? When can it be good for your teenager? Because it can be very good for your teenager. It can be an avenue for them to express themselves, which I don't think they have very often. And it can keep them connected to good things and to good people. My friend, Brother Joe Wells from Cal Publishings, K-A-I-O, it's the Hebrew word for fire. He lives down in Brentwood. He has a wonderful publishing company. He does a lot for teens and families. My friends Wes McAdams and Matthew Marine do a lot of writing as well in Gospel Brotherhood publications. And you can find them online. Wonderful ways to connect with your Christian life can be done on the internet if we would just but find them and learn about them. What can it do to affect your marriage? A study in 2014 looked at the relationship between social media, marriage satisfaction, and divorce rates, and this is what the study found. The use of social media negatively correlated with marriage quality and happiness. As media use goes up, the quality of the marriage goes down. Use of social media positively correlated with experiencing a troubled marriage and considering divorce. More social media, the more I'm going to consider divorce. They continued to find these correlations even after taking various other things into account. This suggests that social media plays a much larger role than we think in our marriages. Another study from the same year cited another interesting statistic. 1/3 of divorce cases mentioned Facebook in a negative manner. They also noted that one of the top Facebook concerns is inappropriate messages to individuals of the opposite sex. It's on your phone, it's in your pocket, it's on my own private account. What could go wrong? Plenty. People cannot have affairs these days. You will be found out. Okay? There was a time when you could have three families all over the country and nobody would know about it. Okay? But these days, as social media is and the way that we're tracked, it can't be done. So just stay away from it is why I'm saying all this. You can't have an affair. You need to save your marriage rather than looking outside of that relationship and affecting it in such a very negative way. Affairs themselves grow little by little. It might start with innocent talking, but suddenly emotional issues are discussed, and then it becomes physical. We never meant for this to happen. I have couples in affairs tell me that all the time. We never meant for it to happen. I know they didn't. They did not mean for it to happen whenever they tell me that. That's why you've got to be so careful and watch what's going on online and what your behavior is. Much like David looking at Bathsheba in 2 Samuel chapter 11, he was looking at something that he shouldn't have been looking at, and he was feeding into that behavior that he knew was wrong. Another way that the internet can harm your marriage is the use of pornography. At one time, it was difficult to get. It was behind the counter. It was in places that you had to be a certain age in order to access. But now, your three-year-old could probably stumble upon it very easily at one click of a button. Pornography is creeping into our boys' lives without the parents knowing it, via YouTube and other means. If you can Google an image, you can find pornography. Go to Google, type in something, anything that's sexually related, and click on the word image, and there it will be. Google, other web browsers can have things set up because they want to keep that stuff out of innocent hands as well. But something's going to slip through. I can about guarantee that. For pornography, men turn to it oftentimes because the woman on the screen doesn't say no. It's easy to turn your life over to that and become addicted to it, men and women. It's very addicted to fall into that trap. And it can ruin your marriage in the blink of an eye. I've spoken to many men that have experienced this very, very thing. But because of pornography's accessibility, it is becoming a growing problem in our homes and in our lives. Much like Potiphar's wife who tempted Joseph in Genesis chapter 39. There are websites, there are images that are tempting those who would not most likely turn away. In your marriage, you might be together, but you also might be very, very far apart. My wife and I, when we dine out, I'll notice people. It's very exhausting to be with me sometimes because I'm always looking at married couples and families. And I have to sit in the corner, so I'm not looking around and noticing people. But when I do notice a married couple and they've both got their phones out, I just SMH. What's that? Shake my head. I just shake my head. That's something you'll see on social media quite often are initials and abbreviations to try to get things past other people or to be cute. So when couples are together but they are apart, a lot of times it is because of their phone. If you see me with mine out, it's because I'm trying to settle a bet with my good wife or trying to find out when the movie times are. Because as we've grown more and more attached to our technology, we're actually growing further and further apart from one another. A 16-year-old boy who relies on texting for almost everything made this comment to a researcher. Someday, but certainly not now, I'd like to learn how to have a conversation. We've got to learn how to talk to one another, if for no other reason, for the relationships that we have. You can't hug your phone. You can't do those things that you can only do with another person to have that enriching relationship. Now, does it provide connections? Yes. I had my 20-year reunion last year. I'm so thankful for Facebook because of that. Because of Facebook, we were all able to reconnect and we can still see each other. We can still each other's families and enjoy that friendship continued even today. So it's a wonderful thing. But we've got to keep our teenagers in mind, and we've got to keep our marriages in mind as well. Well, how does it affect your relationship with Christ? Certainly, what has been said so far counts. What has been said for teens, for adults, you know, as we're going down individually or as couples, we're harming our relationship with Christ as well. But for the internet, it brings about a few kind of mental states that I'd like to discuss briefly. One of the attractive features of a Facebook style of communication is that it requires very little of us. We control and entirely control the duration, intensity, and level of contact. At any moment, we can simply stop an online interaction. But the Christian life and real Christian relationships don't work like this, because we do have obligations to one another. I can't just turn you off. I can't just unfollow you. I can't, you know, just unfriend you if you're my Christian brother or sister. We've got to have this continued interaction. And I hope that social media in another 20 to 40 years doesn't bleed further into our society and we make those kinds of changes that keep us from connecting with one another as Christian brothers and sisters. But as with teenagers who can find a lot of good things online, your marriage, you can also do things. I've actually recommended to some of my clients, you know, follow this person on Twitter. Follow this person on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. I don't tweet like I used to, but a lot of other people do, and they put out a lot of good, positive marital messages that people need to hear on a regular basis, because they're just struggling to that great of a degree. And so Twitter can be great for your marriage as well. It can be great for your Christian life too. And I mentioned some good brothers who have had some great things that are online, and I hope that you'll look into that. Let's conclude, please, with 2 Corinthians chapter 13, beginning with verse 5. 2 Corinthians 13, beginning with verse 5. Test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves. Or do you not recognize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail the test? So here we have Paul admonishing the Corinthians to examine yourselves, look at yourselves, and that's what we have to do. We can't just look at ourselves when we're in here. We can't just look at ourselves when we're in public. We've also got to look at ourselves when we're online as well. It's a wonderful tool. Let's grow from it rather than letting it tear us apart.